The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
And now it's time for We the Youth, a program new, very, very new, for the youth, by the youth, and of the youth, where youth voices lead the conversation about the business of the people. Co-created by our Portal for Accountability and Representation, each episode will feature an in-depth conversation about an area of public policy and offer a platform for youth input. Join our co-hosts, Rudolph Namji and Anarion Mason, along with a daily youth leader as they talk about the solutions that younger generations have and how the youth can do their part in shaping a vision for Trinidad and Tobago. Of course, you can join us live on CNC3 from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. And the discussions continue right here on Freedom 106.5 FM until 5 p.m. Let's say good afternoon to our co-host. Hello.
Carrie V, we're back in the house here at We the Youth.
Good afternoon.
It's hot out there.
It is.
And we're going to have a hot topic conversation again today in here. I'm so glad that we're able to represent for the young voices out there. We know that they've been listening for the last 2 days. It's starting to build some momentum. They're appreciating the platform. Again, my name, Rudolph Namji. We started our part because as young generation members, because we are, myself and Anarion, who's the CEO, we are in the millennials. But the millennial generation, Carrie, has to hold that transition period between the elders and the Z generation and the alphas coming up next. And we have to be that change mechanism that advances the national development agenda, knowing what our younger peers are going to be facing in the next 10 to 20 years and what we do today is going to impact them. So that's why we created the organization, and we're very happy to have the program and have all of these youth leaders coming forward from now until Election Day.
Great. So how are you this afternoon, Anarion?
I am well, thank you. And how are you? I mean, outside is hot, so I didn't let you answer.
No, but you're correct. Outside is very hot.
I mean, it is. And like Rudolph said, we have a very hot topic today. And for the rest of this week, we are on hot topics. We are bringing people into the hot seat to discuss current affairs by young people.
So today we're actually being joined by none other than Priyana Udit. And I'll just give our audience out there, and for those of you who are looking on live on CNC3, you need to share our feed. If you're on Facebook, you can like and comment there as well and reach out to our guests. Priyana Udit is a youth energy advocate and renewable energy professional. She's a trailblazing electrical engineer and the first female director of Trifactor Technical Sales and Services Limited. So we don't only have a woman who's trailblazing in an agency that is, or an area that is usually male predominant, but she's also a young woman doing this. So you don't have to wait until you are a certain age to really make the kinds of changes that you want. And at just 29, she's managed solar initiatives for the United Nations Development Programme, that's the UNDP, the University of the West Indies, one of my alma maters that I'm proud of, and Massey Wood Group. And she's one of only 5 certified North American Board of Certified Energy Practitioners. So, Priyana, welcome. With a resume as in-depth as that, one might think you're not as young as you are. But welcome to We the Youth. And tell us a little bit more about yourself. I mean, it's one thing to read all of these credentials.
Yeah.
But tell us a little bit about your journey. What has really inspired you to get into this field?
Yeah.
And what wakes you up every morning, drives you to achieve for national development?
Yes, well, thank you for that introduction. And I am excited to be here and talk about this journey. My background is in electrical and computer engineering. I went to the University of the West Indies, so it's my alma mater as well. I was always good at math and physics. My dad was an engineer, and he was the one who was like, listen, he was one of those parents who said, you have to get into engineering. or law or one of those traditional
traditional fields,
right?
Yes, we all know how our parents are.
Of course. And while in that moment, I was like, no, I want to go into a bunch of other different fields. There was merit in sticking to the science, sticking to what I'm good at, going through a very grueling electrical and computer engineering degree. But coming out on the other side, being able to get involved in the renewable energy space, the space where the space of the future, the energy that should be the main or should eventually be the core form of energy here in Trinidad and Tobago. And so getting involved in the family business, Trifactor Technical, is where I was able to get this extensive experience of solar energy projects. I was able to go in as a trainee. I learned how to manage projects. I learned how to design solar systems. I learned how to go on the field with our installation team and see what is industry practice on the ground. So I have a lot of what of my experiences here is because of my experience in Trifactor Technical and because of my dad saying, listen, get into engineering, please.
That story sounds very familiar to somebody else's story who's sitting on my right. Because like you, Anarion is also an engineer.
Yes.
And Anarion, listening to Priyana, and based on our reflections and conversations we've had, you have a similar story in terms of how your parents encouraged you, and as a young person, you decided to take on something that was hard. Any similarities in listening to Priyana's story? What makes you sort of relive your own journey?
The fact that she started from trainee and went all the way to the top resonates with me, because I started in the oil and gas industry wrapping hose and being like a gopher.
There you go.
You know, being like a gopher and, you know, wrapping hose, sweeping up the plant, doing plant maintenance, things like that. And when I left the oil and gas industry and the oil and gas world, I left as a project manager.
And Priyana, to that point, earlier in the week, a caller or two pointed out that there's a perception out there that a lot of young people have this entitlement problem. They were generalizing.
Yeah.
That sometimes we believe that things should just be handed to us.
Mm-hmm.
But from introducing ourselves, I mean, each of us has worked very hard to get where we are, and we've put in our dues. But I think, would you say that our generation has had some enablers that maybe the older generations didn't have, which in some way assisted us to move a little faster than what they might have been accustomed to?
Yes, so absolutely. Now, there is a fine line, I think. There's a delicate line between being overly entitled and knowing what could be possible if you move a little bit faster, right? I believe that there is a way that we traditionally did things. And when we go into our oil and gas identity, a lot of how we moved was very slowly, building experience very slowly over decades in order to then have a voice, in order to then be in leadership. And the younger generation now realizes that with technology, with AI, with so many things happening, there is room to progress a lot faster and to be in leadership positions or spaces where your voice can be heard at an earlier stage and at an earlier age. So there will always be a border of entitlement versus maybe quicker progressions into getting to somewhere.
And younger people actually being a little bit more empowered to take up space. And I think that's sometimes what ruffles older people's feathers. I'm generalizing now because, of course, there are older people who are very much focused on mentorship and succession planning. And all of us would have benefited from that.
Of course.
You know, older people who make space for us, our allies and champion that we should take up that space.
Yeah.
But before we really get into the crux of the conversation, I think some of the issues that we're touching on we need to relate them to the, as you rightfully started doing, to remind our listeners and viewers about how this entire sector has been emerging over time.
Yeah.
And we have to create the right context, right, Anarion?
Correct.
Now, Trinidad likes to boast that we are over 100 years old in the sector. As a matter of fact, there are research papers that posit that the first barrel of oil was produced here in Trinidad and Tobago, right? That's another conversation for another day. But as someone who's actually been a practitioner in the traditional energy space, Anarion, you would have been about, when you were born, we would have already been about 70 years into the space, give or take, 60 to 70 years
in
the space.
Correct. Thanks for making me feel old.
Well, I thought you were going to feel young. No, but let's put that in its proper context. Mm-hmm. When you were born, 60 years of national policy in energy had already been in place.
Correct.
And parts of that policy would have been implemented at different stages.
Correct.
So when you were born, you had no say. So for most of your life, because, and I want to hand it to you to explain to people how oil and gas really works. I think there's still a belief that you go and poke holes in the ground and something comes up and almost immediately you begin earning revenue, etc., right? But
correct.
You, from what I'm saying is, for most of your life, you would have had to be a beneficiary of whatever came before.
Correct, yeah.
So what is your assessment then of how that older policy has impacted you for the last 30 years? And then we can sort of bridge now, how do we assess what we're asking for in this tangential space of renewables?
Yeah.
Because what we don't want to do is repeat some of the same gaps or mistakes that we applied in the older sector in this new space. So what do you think about it, looking back?
You know me well enough to know that I like comparisons and I like to go to the contemporary. And with that being said, I like to look at oil and gas and renewable in this form. Everybody have phones and you upgrade your phones. So if you look at oil and gas as your old iPhone or your old Samsung or whatever brand you're going, maybe one of them can sponsor the show. But if you look at it like that and then 3-4 years later, you know, you have to upgrade because there's no more progress for you. We can look at oil and gas and renewable in that sense. And the reason I say that is oil and gas served its purpose. Now, I'm not stating a position here. I'm being very judgmental and very biased. Non-biased. Oil and gas served its purpose. Without oil and gas, we wouldn't be where we are today. But before oil and gas came coal, and before that was wood. And now we're moving forward into the renewable space where we have the technology that we've learned and we can now build from oil and gas, because microchips and all these things are byproducts of crude oil. And from there, we use that technology and we progress, we elevate, and we move towards renewable. The reason why we need to move towards renewable is, and you know I'm a champion for the 17 goals.
The UN SDGs, the Sustainable Development Goals.
If it is young people don't start using renewables, we're going to damage our ozone layer, we're going to damage our country, we're going to damage the world. Think for a second of the Mad Max movies. How they were fighting for gas, it's gonna finish at a point in time. They were racing and killing each other in the show, in the movie, for fighting for gas. And what it is, that area that became so desolate, that wasteland, is what we could expect if we don't look at renewable energy.
But Priyana, on that note then, so I don't think that persons like yourself are necessarily advocating that we wake up one morning and completely end usage of
fossil fuels
and traditional energy. Explain exactly what you see then as the transition or the complementing of the traditional energy sources with renewable. As a younger person advocating in this space, what, paint that picture for us. And again, if you can, compare at the same time what you'd like to see done differently from how we managed oil and gas. Because as of this morning, the entire country woke up, or should have got up this morning,
yeah.
and had a sort of a knot in their stomach,
yeah.
because the existing energy policy
yeah.
has literally led us into a point where we put, if not all, maybe 99% of our eggs in a basket
yeah.
that was filled with risk.
Yeah.
And we were being promised that 2027, persons like us would be reaping all these new benefits.
Yeah.
The economy would be thriving. We would have jobs. We would have
yeah.
infrastructure development. But 2 years from now, we're not going to have that
yeah.
anymore. So paint the picture for us and then segue. Let us understand, how does that picture happen by doing things slightly differently?
Okay. So I could use the example of Trifactor, the company mm-hmm. that I work for. Our business development sector is renewable energy. Why is it still business development? Our core business is still in the oil and gas and petrochemical industry. The money, the business, the finances, the projects, the large-scale projects, the US dollars, they are all still in the oil and gas and petrochemical sector. Now, with advancements in renewable energy, some companies now have internal policies for renewable energy implementation. But that could be very difficult. There are challenges that will stop this renewable energy implementation in our country. In Trinidad and Tobago is heavily reliant on fossil fuels. Currently, over 99% of our electricity is generated from natural gas. We do have some ambitious renewable energy projects on paper. The government has committed...
On paper.
We spoke, Anarion, earlier about that utility-scale solar project, the 112 megawatt.
Mm-hmm.
They call it the Lara project, yes. That is very reflective of the pace of renewable energy implementation in Trinidad. There are so many challenges that they've been facing to even get this project off of the ground, from regulatory and policy barriers to limitations on the grid infrastructure to our culture as this oil and gas country, right? All of those would be things that will keep this project back, but on a much larger scale is what is keeping us back as a country in implementing renewable energy. Yeah.
Because one of the things that I learned early on when I was even at the university and we were looking at, because I was studying business at the time,
yeah.
and we, of course, had to look at the economy
mm-hmm.
and think as young graduates
yep.
how we would be entering the business sector, how we would help with diversification, etc.
Yep.
And part of what we learned, and it hasn't changed, is that even after 100 plus years of being in the oil and gas space, as far as I am aware, Trinidad and Tobago as a country, we don't own any intellectual property, or we don't own any patents
mm.
or innovative designs
yeah.
that could be licensed, because Singapore does this.
Yeah.
People talk a lot about the Singapore model.
Yeah.
Singapore, unlike us, didn't have natural resources except
yeah.
their people.
Mm-hmm.
And they put their best and brightest minds into that space of design engineering
mm-hmm.
and creating intellectual property that
yeah.
they could then license out for millions and hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
I find it, and when I talk about government policy, I find it curious that even after 50 years of oil and gas, 60 years of oil and gas, Trinidad and Tobago was not the center of excellence for oil and gas in the whole world.
Yeah.
I found it strange that hundreds, thousands of people were not traveling to Trinidad and Tobago
mm-hmm.
to perhaps attend
yeah.
classes here to learn in this, the motherland of
yes.
oil and gas exploration.
Right.
Yeah.
We've also seen up recently the tragedy with the Paria divers.
Yes.
And we can't forget things like that and
mm-hmm.
people who have lost
yes.
their lives in the sector, right?
Yeah.
After so many years of HSSE and government regulations and experience in a space, how do these things still happen? And those are the gaps in public policy that that I am afraid we are going to relive in the renewable space. I wake up sometimes, unfortunately, feeling afraid that if persons like you, Priyana, and you, Anari, and people who are in the sector, or both sectors, I should say, if younger people don't advocate more and open their mouths and demand that we make certain shifts, 50 years from now, the people who are being born then, like Anarin was born at that time when we had 50 to 60 to 70 years experience, they'll wake up and say, why is this sector failing us? Or why are we not hitting the KPIs that we're supposed to be hitting? Yeah. So, and what, please,
for
yeah.
Some
what
do you for some context, I did some research on just general research because we don't have a lot of actual industry statistics. But to give an idea, youth, which would be 40 and under, according to this statistic, occupy just about 10 to 15% of our energy industry workers, with estimates suggesting that less than 5% take up leadership roles in our traditional energy sector. What is that saying for the energy sector, and who is making decisions for the youth? It's not the youth, because it's less than 5% of these people are actually involved in...
I was not aware of that statistic.
Yeah.
That is a powerful point.
Yep.
You know what, you see, from experience in oil and gas and from where it is, how I've seen things outside, they value experience over qualifications.
Yes.
So you were there when there were land rigs, and based off of those land rigs, you drilled and you found oil and you led into production, and it worked that way. And then when you go offshore, you do the same thing. But if it is you go and you study seismology or geology and those things, they take it into consideration. But the persons who actually doing the hard work and who out there slinging this and swinging that are older people with years, decades of experience. And they don't, whilst they do automate certain things, a lot of stuff in the exploration and production aspect is still a lot of manual labor. At least here in Trinidad, that is.
Now, I have to say, I mean, we have to give Jack the jacket when we are talking about experience and lengthy careers, right? There is a wealth of knowledge in those who have come before us, the generations before us.
Certainly.
Who started and lived their entire lives working in the oil and gas and petrochemical industry, the traditional energy industry. And in those times, and even to this day, there is a very lengthy career progression in traditional energy. It takes a decade or more to reach anywhere near to managerial or supervisory positions. It takes 20 years or 25 years or 30 years to then get into a position where you are seen as experienced and qualified enough to be in a leadership position.
Right.
And there was merit in that, and there still is. However, I believe that a balance of both long-term career experience and fresh, youthful, progressive perspectives are very important to be combined to make better decisions for the future.
So let's take Petrotrin as an example.
Yeah.
I remember growing up as a kid and hearing about this great company.
Yeah.
And I mean, almost all of us knew someone who worked in Petrotrin, or we would read about it in the newspapers.
Yep.
It would be on the news every day. And fast forward a few years later, we had to shutter this amazing company at one, you know, at one time that, as you said, was responsible for driving our economy. You had so many elders in that company taking up space. They had, together, would have had thousands of years of experience.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's how you quantify experience for younger people out there. When you have minds at a table together, you create what is called synergy, right? We are familiar with that term. It means that you don't simply get the sum of the parts. So like at this table, we're not just three.
Yeah.
We're actually multiples of ourselves, because together we can complement each other's strengths. You have different experiences, Anarian and myself.
Yeah.
And then, of course, when we combine that experience, we don't just get 25 plus 20 plus 20, we actually get more because of the multiplier effect.
Yes. Okay.
So you have had these tried and tested elders in this space for, you know, with all of this experience. And the question has to be asked, why did Petrichor get to the point that it eventually did? And we had no choice but to restructure it and send persons home and cause this entire upheaval and have debt, billions of dollars of debt, if that experience was really all that we needed. And I think the answer is clear that, to your point, maybe if along the way we had found some mechanism to bring in different perspectives and a more future-focused outlook than really just dealing with what was in front of us.
Yes.
Who knows, maybe today Petrichor might have been the renewable energy giant of the world.
Probably.
So, Carrie, I think that's a good point to take a break, and we can sort of come back and reflect on that. For all of you all who are looking on live on CNC3, remember the first hour we're simulcast from 4 o'clock. We'll be live from 3 to 4, my apologies, we'll be live in the radio station only, but that's when we'll actually take our calls. So, Carrie, back to you.
Of course, thank you. And if you're now joining us, good afternoon. This is Freedom 106.5 FM. This is We the Youth going all the way to 5 p.m. live on CNC3 until 4. You can continue our WhatsApp 306-1065. We're going to take a quick break. When we'll be back, much more. Keep it locked. And we are back. Welcome back at 3:33 right here on Freedom 106.5 FM. And of course, we are live on CNC3. This is We the Youth. I'm here with my co-hosts, Rudolph Namji and Anarion Mason. And we're back. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon again, everyone. And if you're just joining us, we are here live with Priyana Udit, our very own renewable energy expert and youth advocate for this episode of We the Youth. Just to remind you, we started on Monday with Carrie and Freedom 106.5 FM and CNC3, and we're going all the way up to Election Day, or the day before Election Day. But each day we're going to be privileged to have a youth leader who's an expert in a specific field, and that's why Priyana's with us. And just before the break, again, for those of you who are now joining us, remember to share the feed, comment on it, send a like, send a question. In the 4 o'clock hour, we will actually be taking calls on, you can send your text messages to 306-1065.
That's WhatsApp messages.
WhatsApp messages, and you can call live in that hour on 625-2257. So, Priyana, before the break, just to bring everybody back up to speed, we got into a heavy conversation using Petrichor as a case study for government policy in the energy space.
Yes.
And how that policy, literally, that is what led us to where we are today.
Yeah.
You can't get away from that.
Of course.
The decisions that were made by various administrations over so many years, 70 plus years, that, because the citizens don't make the day-to-day decisions.
Of course.
So if you were to look at that, for example, how do we apply some of those learnings or gaps to the renewable space?
Of course. So one of the biggest things, I was talking to Anarion about it earlier, the meat of the matter that we have to talk about today is the challenges, not just in the energy sector and energy transition, but the challenges that the youth are facing in the energy sector and the energy transition. To reel back to the policy gaps and government inaction, or just inaction with the implementation of policies, solar systems, in order to make it accessible, in order to make it
feasible,
in order to implement it on wider scales, there are a few things that we can do from a policy perspective. There's this really cool thing called a feed-in tariff. It's called FIT.
Right.
What this feed-in tariff would encourage is that every person with a roof could purchase solar panels, slap it onto their roof, connect to the grid. Connect to the electricity grid. If they produce a surplus of energy, if they produce a surplus of energy, they can sell it back to the grid. They can quite literally be paid for the energy.
So we need to cut this short. We need to take a break. And when we come back, it's going to be much more. So continue keeping it locked as we sign off from CNC3. Continue to keep it locked to Freedom 106.5 FM. Welcome back and good afternoon. This is We The Youth right here on Freedom 106.5 FM. And of course, we are live on CNC3 until 4 p.m. And then the conversation continues right here on radio from 5 p.m. We The Youth with my co-host, Rudy Hananji, and Anarion Mason. Welcome back.
Welcome
Carrie,
back.
The topic was so hot.
We set the fire
alarm. Some alarms, yes. But we're all safe and back in studio.
Yes.
And, you know, as young people, we should be the ones who are accustomed dealing with dynamics, right?
Dynamic situations, stress, high stress situations, getting back to stability and balance after this very... very crazy.
COVID did train us for season.
Oh, it did.
Yes.
But before that happened, we were actually getting into some of the
policy gaps. Yeah.
So take us back there, Priyana. We were using Petrotrin as a sort of a starting point.
Yeah.
As a case study.
Yes.
But so go back to your first point that you were making in terms of these are some of the gaps that we have to be aware of, right?
For sure. So in order to make, as I said before, in order to make solar and renewable energy accessible to every resident, every commercial building, every private or public sector organization, it needs to be feasible, it needs to be cost efficient. It needs to make sense cost-wise.
Because you're asking people to shift to something.
Of course. You're asking them to shift. You're asking them to rely on renewable energy. Yeah. Money on renewable energy.
That's it, right. Yes.
And in order to make these things feasible and reachable, we have a few things that government, whichever government there is in power, can put into place. In multiple other countries, right here in the Caribbean, there's this tax structure called a feed-in tariff.
Right.
What a feed-in tariff I was explaining before is you are able to put as many solar panels onto your home, onto your building, even if you do not use that amount of energy in your home every day. If there's a surplus, you get to sell it back to the grid. You get to make money from producing more electricity as a resident, as one individual, or as a company, as an organization. However, we don't have in Trinidad a clear regulatory framework for these types of systems. You call these grid-tied systems. This is where the solar is tied to our electricity grid, right? That's where feed-in tariffs will come into play.
So let's stick up in for a minute right there.
For sure.
Maybe Nars will jump in here because I know he's a process man, right?
Yeah.
we're telling young people in many spaces, their agencies, that are spending taxpayer dollars to host public relation campaigns and to talk to young people in schools about solar, with, you know, their energy companies that provide grants and sponsorship for projects and promotions and whatnot. But what you are saying is that even if, let's say, young people in their neighborhoods were interested in investing or encouraging their parents to invest in solar panels.
Yes.
Because the regulatory framework has not advanced, and again, government policy. Mm-hmm. When we talk about policy, all of these things fall under that word, that umbrella, policy.
Yep.
So
legal framework.
Legal frameworks.
As well as literal grid infrastructure.
Because the policy has to be that we want to upgrade the hardware.
Currently,
the policy has to be we want to change the law.
Yes.
The policy has to be we have to allocate money to this. All of these things.
Correct. It is prohibitive at this moment.
So the RIC, I believe, because they run TNTech.
Yes.
Well, not run. They are the overseers, the supervisory.
For the
rates.
For the rates, allocations.
But in that entire public consultation process, this issue came up.
Yeah.
Because there were some younger voices saying, one of the ways we can deal with this cost of electricity is through this transition that you are referencing, right? However, I don't know if young people, this should irritate us as young people, right? There are colonial era laws. I'm not even talking about laws that were passed in the last 10 or 15 years.
Yeah.
Laws that were passed when we were still a colony of Britain that are on our books that govern utilities.
Yeah.
So, for example, with WASA.
Yeah, with water. If rainfall, WASA claims the water.
Because
but technically,
the state owns all water, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But in the space of the electrical grid.
Yes.
So I'm a trained attorney.
Yes.
When you look at the legislation, I can tell you that it can be solved literally with a few signatures.
Yeah.
And carrying it to the parliament and getting 41 people, or at least the majority, because you don't need a special majority.
Mm-hmm.
You can get a majority, whoever's in the administration, to change this policy. So what Priyana is talking about, guys, if you're listening out there, she's not talking about something that is very difficult relatively to change.
Yeah.
But what she's saying is that because that policy hasn't changed, this idea is stuck in a bit of a crosshairs.
And you mentioned RIC, and that's a interesting topic, especially when it comes to renewable energy. Our rate for electricity per kilowatt hour, before there were any increases in the rate, we had the third or fourth cheapest rate of electricity in the world.
Yes.
Currently, we are still in the top 10% of cheapest rates of electricity in the world. While we may think that is a blessing, in the space of transitioning to renewable energy, it is a curse. Hear me out.
Yeah, I understand.
Hear me out. If I have to cost a renewable energy system right now for a residential customer,
yes,
it can cost between $40,000, $60,000, $100,000. How can I compare that to the third or fourth cheapest rate of electricity in the world that they're paying from the grid, from the electrical grid? How can I justify buying renewable energy systems? It doesn't make sense.
Especially... because we have to layer onto all of these conversations the socioeconomic realities.
Of course.
Especially in today's Trinidad and Tobago, where many people are having to... How did one of our prime ministers say it? Ban your belly.
Mm-hmm.
So that point you're making immediately, to my mind, highlights about 10 or 15 government policies that need to be put into place to facilitate that transition.
Yeah.
Now, talk a little bit more about the concept of you're installing these. So this is some of the technical specs behind it.
Yeah.
You're installing solar panels and generating electricity. You might store some of it, I gather, in a battery.
Correct, in battery
so
systems.
So walk us through a little bit of that exciting, because I think young people like to know some of the technical
for sure.
Side.
So when people call in to, because there's a lack of awareness and education around really what renewable energy systems mean, we deal mostly in Trinidad here, we deal mostly with solar systems, solar energy systems, solar PV photovoltaic systems. What this is the solar panel on your roof or ground mounted or roof mounted, however you choose to mount it, generates electricity from the sun.
Right.
It then goes into a charge controller that then sends some of that charge to batteries to charge up your batteries. And then also sends it to your appliances. You're trying to power your fridge, your TV. So that is what we call a solar PV generating system, photovoltaic. There's so many other types of solar systems. There are solar water heating systems where you install a water heater that uses the direct heat and sunlight and heats up your water that you could use as a regular water heater in your house.
And I remember 20, 30 years ago, countries like St. Martin and Barbados had already transitioned to the majority of households using
solar water
back then, whatever the technology was then, and we have new technology. But that's okay, so that's a good point. That's a good example.
Heating.
Right.
So water heating is an expensive venture in this realm of electricity.
Right.
It takes a lot of electricity to have a water tank, a traditional water tank that heats up your water for you to bathe, for you to take and soak your foot in, to go and bathe and have a long shower after a long day. So solar water heaters have actually been one of the hottest selling items because it is very accessible cost-wise, and it doesn't take much to install. We have solar water heaters that we would have installed for between $10,000 and $12,000 for 4 or 5 person family homes, right? That removes the need for any electric water heater.
So over time, it pays back for itself.
Of course. Right. That is one of the things that makes more sense for the residential customer. There's also solar lighting. We do solar lighting for perimeter lighting. We have security lighting. So we would design a lighting system based on what your requirements are. We could light up a sports field. We could light up a playing field. We could light up your parking lot if you need some extra security in your parking lot. So that's the solar lighting. So as you can tell, there's mostly solar energy and solar generating systems that we can focus on here in Trinidad because it is the more feasible option. We are an island. We have 2 seasons, the wet and the dry season, the hot and the rainy season. And even during the rainy season, we can see that there is a lot of sun, right? So when there is no sun, we have energy storage systems, which is where the battery comes into play. But yeah, most of our systems are generally solar systems.
Aaron, I'm listening to Priyana, right? And I know we've sort of stuck here, and there's some other points you want to raise, which we'll get into. And just a reminder, folks, in the 4 o'clock hour, please get your calls, your questions ready. 306-1065 for WhatsApp messages and 625-2257 for calls. In a few minutes, we'll be taking those calls. But just before we close off this first hour, and Aaron, I'm listening to Priyana, and you know I'm a policy guy, right?
I know.
Imagine if we were to change this one regulatory framework. I hope people out there listening to and taking away what she's actually getting at. By changing one area of policy, what Priyana is talking about is you can create a better quality of life for hundreds of thousands of people because it now becomes more affordable and feasible for them to enjoy things that some of us take for granted.
Absolutely.
Secondly, you're going to be creating subsectors because all of those components, you're going to need people to install,
to maintain. And those are, a lot of my focus is that this shift to renewable energy is not just for the engineers. It is for the entrepreneurs. It is for the persons in tech who could develop solar apps. It is for the persons in communication, the persons who are able to market and increase education and awareness. So the transition does not involve only technical people. Youth in every single field can become involved in this energy transition to renewable energy.
And then what Priyana is also, because we here might take it for granted, what we didn't say earlier is that for every kilowatt, because you said 90 plus percent, 99% is still being generated by fossil fuels, right? Well, we use gas, don't we?
Yeah.
But if you pay attention out there, people, for every liter that we use for electricity generation, we lose the opportunity to sell on the open market.
Yes.
And we've heard policymakers talk about this problem. So by changing one policy area, we could actually be generating foreign exchange without having to use the natural gas for local energy consumption needs.
Yeah.
And again, you all know that gas can also then go into the entire ecosystem.
Of course.
Create processed goods, further value added products and services. So I am hearing here, this is why we're having We the Youth.
Yeah.
Because there are so many young people like you, Priyana, out there who know these things. You're excited about it. You're passionate. If you all are given an opportunity, wouldn't you all come forward and actively help to get all of these things working for Trinidad and Tobago?
Absolutely. And this is where I could very easily encourage youth, anyone who's in the energy sector or considering studying engineering, getting into entrepreneurship. There are so many ways that you could improve your skills and your yourself in order to become an asset to this energy transition and this energy sector. I have done a lot of free or scholarship-based courses that have improved my knowledge. We have programs offered by the Indian High Commission called the ITEC program. We have American learning institutions called Solar Energy International. You can learn, you can give yourself the skills that you need to. You can also advocate and speak up in your organization.
I want you to bring back that point. We're going to need to take a break for the top of the hour. So, Carrie, back to you.
Thank you so much. And, of course, as we go to the 4 p.m. headlines, we sign off from CNC3. So thank you to all our viewers. And don't forget, you can continue engaging with us right here on Freedom 106.5 FM. Send us those messages via WhatsApp 306-1065. We continue the discussion until 5 p.m. This is We The Youth. Welcome back. Good afternoon. It's just about 6 minutes after four right here on Freedom 106.5 FM. Continue sending us those messages via WhatsApp 306-1065. And of course, you can give us a call. This is We The Youth, a new program for the youth, by the youth, and of the youth, where youth voices lead the conversation about the business of the people, co-created by our Portal for Accountability and Representation. Each episode will feature an in-depth conversation about an area of public policy and offer a platform for youth input. So join me with our co-hosts, Rudolph Anamji and Anarion Mason, along with a daily youth leaders. They talk about the solutions that younger generations have. Let's touch base with our co-hosts. Hello, guys. You're live.
Hello.
We're glad to be back. Hour number two. Time passes quickly here at We The Youth.
It does. It does.
So, and youth, your youth years also pass very quickly.
Well, very quickly, actually.
You're Carrie? Always a child at heart, though.
You I would so? Like to think so.
My bones don't say so. Okay. So we'll have to talk about that.
That's why we're talking about the
heart, not the bones. Yeah, right. I think we should do that.
No, but I think that, we joke about it. But at the end of the day, while you're still young at heart, while you still belong to this emerging generation, millennials, Z-gens, alphas, people have to take up that space and that consciousness that we can do things faster. As Priyana was saying in the first hour, we have technology now, we have different tools, different capacity for young people to really take up space in a more effective way than maybe our elders had the opportunity to. Mm. And that's why the platform was created. And in the first hour, we were simulcast, of course, on CNC3.
Thank you so much.
We promised that in the second hour of the program, we're going to encourage people to call in, give their opinions, ask some questions, send messages through WhatsApp 306-1065, call in at 625-2257. But the conversation with you, Brianna, it took us in many different verticals and spaces.
So we have a voice note. Let's see if we can get it. Let's get the message first, and then I'll play the voice note after, all right? So good afternoon, Carrie V. Your guest speaker is absolutely right, but this only happens in the Nordic countries. Thus far, in terms of operational, other big economies, countries like the UK and the US have implemented this. Yet, so do you think we will do it here in Trinidad and Tobago? What's her thoughts on that? In addition, to cost to purchase and install a solar system in Trinidad is quite expensive. Just imagine $30,000 for a 5-kilowatt system that can't even generate enough electricity to run a refrigerator or an air conditioner. What are your thoughts on this? I am an advocate for renewable energy so much, so I'm looking at that solar paint technology currently being pioneered in India. What are your thoughts?
That's a great question, and it goes back to some of the challenges that we spoke about earlier that we face to transition into the renewable energy space. Solar system, unfortunately, solar systems are expensive for the everyday, for the resident, for the man on the street, for anyone who really is interested in reducing their carbon footprint, going green. These things all sound great on paper. We do not have the legal framework nor the infrastructure in Trinidad to make solar accessible to a residential customer. The reason why these systems are so expensive, I spoke earlier about battery storage systems. battery storage systems are part of the solar systems that we have to install because we are not allowed to just tie the solar to the grid and just feed either between solar or grid based on the capacity, the amount of sun that there is.
Mm-hmm.
Battery energy systems are immensely expensive. That usually takes up about 60 to 75% the cost of that system.
Wow.
It could go down significantly if there was no need for batteries, mm-hmm. i.e. there was no need for this specific type of system, which is an off-grid right. system. If we had grid-tied system and grid-tied infrastructure in place, policy-wise and legally, right. it would become a lot more accessible.
So, like, you know, in Shagramas around the Broadwalk,
yes.
we have the lights that are generated by solar.
Yes.
So compared to, well, those lights compared to the ones that we would like for residential use.
Yes.
What is the difference? Or to get that there, is there a vast difference? Because I thinking, like, no, I don't know much.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking, like, but if you could get it right on the Broadwalk, I should be able to get a street light, or even I can have one panel over my roof. So
yes.
what is the difference?
So we spoke earlier about the types, different types of solar generating systems.
Mm-hmm.
What this customer is speaking about, the $30,000 solar 5-kilowatt system,
mm-hmm.
that's a intricate solar PV system. Solar lighting mm-hmm. is pretty accessible. Solar mm-hmm. lighting, you can have all-in-one lights, which the entire light, the top of the light is the panel and the bottom is the solar light, right?
Right.
And there's a battery in between, and these lights could operate for 2 or 3 days without sunlight.
Right.
That is accessible and available. Trifactor has done many installations, solar light installations,
right.
for solar security, for right in your home, you want a solar floodlight, you can get that.
Right.
For perimeter lighting,
mm-hmm.
for we did an installation in Tobago for EID Cut, this place called Cove Tobago. We lit up the entire compound with solar lights,
right?
And this means that they don't have to tap into the electricity grid to get solar, to get light.
Yeah. Now, I visited Barbados.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And almost all the houses I saw, they had the big panel. And I was like, what happened to us? Why can't we do that?
Government policy.
Feed-in tariffs. Those two things.
And it's so mm-hmm. unfortunate because
yes.
we do have the resources.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we not?
Well, we have year-round sun.
But Priyana, you made mention yeah. of it. It's that sort of complacency
yes.
that comes with this subsidy that we created to support the cost. Now, you are right. The country actually promotes the cheap electricity cost
yeah.
as a part of the value proposition for foreign direct investment.
Mm.
So a number of companies chose to come to Trinidad and Tobago because at that time we had the cheapest kilowatt. I think it was 3 cents US per mm. kilowatt hour for residential and maybe 10 or 12 cents per kilowatt hour for commercial installations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And again, what is curious about government policy gaps here is that we created that subsidy so many years ago
yep.
with our eyes fully open that mm. What it means is that part of our tax dollars goes to pay for our own electricity consumption.
Yes.
So
right.
what we pay as the consumer, mm. whether as a company or a resident, is not the real value of it, which is what the RIC, the case they were trying to make
yes.
recently.
Mm. Yes.
Now, if you create a policy like that 30, 40 years in the past,
mm-hmm.
I would like to think that looking at the future, you would bake into it or tie into it a secondary policy that says something to the effect of 20% of the revenue generated from the foreign. So you're saying we could create foreign direct investment attraction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Shouldn't we tie in that 20-30% of the FDI money that comes in because of this incentive
mm.
goes into solarizing our grid?
Yeah,
right.
That is what is missing. It's the completion of the thought of the policy where you take one policy and you tie it into another policy,
right.
which gives us what Priyana said, what you said, the sustainability
yes.
factor.
Mm-hmm. But a big part of that problem is that we have power purchase agreements with our generating companies that are decades long. It started 10, 20, 30 years ago, but the agreement is for a 50-year contract for them to generate electricity via traditional oil and gas. And we have to pay for that for the next 20 years, 30 years. One of our generation companies, we have a contract with them up until 2041.
Wow.
2041
let's not count how old all of us will be at 2041. We'll get depressed.
And what? And this could be, I would say this could be an encouragement to anyone who has any say in these power purchase agreements and the negotiation of these power purchase contracts, is that you negotiate either down the amount of years that we need to use natural gas to produce electricity, or include some renewable energy clauses in there.
Yeah. Now we have a few, we have a voice note, and then we have a few messages about two. So we'll get those. And of course, guys, continue sending us those messages via WhatsApp 306-1065. This is you, We the Youth. And we're going all the way to 5 p.m. We have a break coming up at around 20 past 4. So let's get those messages in and let's see what they say.
Here is logic and maybe it's not a smart thing to do. If I was the prime minister of Trinidad and Tobago and I going into an election in about less than a month, right? 28 days or 20-something days. And I know that if I give the news, I know because I communicating with the U.S., I communicating with Rubio.
All right. I think you're kind of off track a little bit.
Join us tomorrow.
Tomorrow for that conversation.
Carrie, we'll start that message and bring it back tomorrow.
Put it on the top. All right, another message. Hey, good afternoon, Carrie. There's no renewal of energy. It is an alternative. Just by carbon footprint, fossil fuel is better. If we continue to be better until we are almost out of fossil fuels. This comes from Princeton.
Right. So in that instance, you see, fossil fuels right now, what it is they do is they generate power. They put gas in your vehicles. Plus, they do byproducts.
Like plastic. As a simple example.
So like that, those tumblers that you like from Starbucks and from those, you know, Stanley cups and those different
things. They can sponsor the next program.
Right? So those things that you like from those places, that is made as a byproduct. Now, if it is we run out of fossil fuels, you're not going to get that.
But Anarian, explain a little bit just quickly. I know we'll get into it tomorrow. But when people say run out, what we really talk about is it will become less feasible. Because there's a lot of fossil fuel in some wells, but we can't get at it because it's too expensive, it's too risky. So it means we just can't use it anymore.
There's also the supply and demand factor.
Correct.
And would we ever run out of it? Not likely?
Not necessarily. Not in a lifetime that us nor our great-great-great-great-grandchildren may see.
It's like many other minerals. Like people talk about gold or diamonds. Gold and diamonds are deliberately kept scarce. So I visited the diamond sorting facilities in India, and there are millions of diamonds in vaults in different parts of the world, so that the stones that we have remain scarce. So it's like any other commodity. We really will not use out fossil fuels.
Correct.
If we just continued using all of it in our generation, and as you said, Anarian, maybe 5, 10, 15 generations.
When we refine these fossil fuels, we turn it into natural gas, which we use a lot here. There has been a major decline in natural gas available to all of us, including our oil and gas and petrochemical sector. It went down from around 4.3 BCF per day in 2010 to about 2.7 BCF per day in 2023. Am I allowed to mention the Dragon gas field?
No, but I think it's an important inflection point. The point, because I want to talk a little bit about that.
All right. So listen, we got to take a break. So when we come back, we'll touch on that point, because when I was growing up, I heard that it would not last forever. Yes. And that is what's stuck in my mind.
And that's exactly what's happening.
Ah, so anyway, let's go take a break. It's just about 4:20. Guys, continue sending me those messages via WhatsApp 306-1065. This is We The Youth, where we're having these discussions and we would like your input as a youth. Let us know. Talk to us. We're going to take a quick one and be back.
We the youth, welcome back to all our listeners here on Freedom 106.5 FM. We know we lost some of you who were streaming us live on CNC3 in the first hour, but remember, the second hour of We the Youth is all about your engagement. Send your messages through WhatsApp 306-1065 and call us on 625-2257, right, Carrie?
Yeah.
The lines are open.
Of course it is. Or 627-3223. We have a message here on WhatsApp.
Let's get it in.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Do you think the implementation of the use of only AC inverter units and solar water heaters be mandatory to help with the depleting natural gas supply, which is used to generate electricity and also to help with the environment, similarly to
So I will take this one because I'm free to be a little facetious here, right? We have to sometimes remember that, unfortunately, in the past, a number of the policy prescriptions of current and former administrations have actually been dictated by other powers that exist in the political ecosystem.
Yeah.
We've heard talk about financiers, about the private sector.
Mm-hmm.
So when you mandate changes like that, what you're going to be doing is causing loss of revenue in other sectors because it's a transition.
Yeah.
So people have to move away from the existing products and services,
yes,
and adopt new ones.
Yeah.
So unless you have the political will to make those shifts in the ecosystem, you don't get the change in policy. And sometimes you ask a simple question, well, why? Priyana is saying that this thing can have so many opportunities.
Yeah.
It's relatively easy to shift, to get all the research papers are done, the technology's there, the young people are waiting to get involved. Why not? The why not is because there's a vested interest sometimes in maintaining the status quo.
Correct.
So, Priyana, we were talking, you know, earlier about this entire shift,
mm-hmm,
that is
a need for a shift. Yeah.
And you said, can we talk about the Dragon Gas deal?
Yes.
So the Dragon Gas deal was supposed to be the panacea.
Yes.
I heard the Prime Minister say at the press conference that they never said that it would save everything, and there were other, you know, other eggs in the basket. But the fact remains, if we don't use this as a wake-up moment,
mm-hmm,
I am afraid, as I said earlier, that we're going to go down the river.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't only not have paddles, but we probably wouldn't have the canoes either. We'll be swimming along and drowning as we go along.
Absolutely.
What are your thoughts? You wanted to talk about it. What is this development?
For sure. So just some context on the Dragon Gas field for those who may not be extremely aware of the energy sector and some of the things that may have been going on. The Dragon field is an offshore natural gas field located in Venezuelan waters near the maritime border with Trinidad. It contains an estimated 4.2 trillion cubic feet of natural gas. Trinidad and Tobago did sign a deal with Venezuela to extract and process that gas in Trinidad, which would help alleviate the decline in our local gas production, right?
Right.
But because of the geopolitical space that we are in, mm-hmm, U.S. sanctions on Venezuela,
which was no secret to anybody.
Which was no secret to anyone.
Not surprising.
At all. The project required a license, and as of 2 days ago, that license was revoked. What does that mean to Trinidad? That's going to be a threat to our gas supply stability. Mm-hmm. There's going to be an economic impact. We have so much foreign exchange earnings from our energy exports, LNG, methanol, ammonia. That will decline without the actual natural gas feedstock, right? And we can reduce, we could see job loss, we could see lower GDP because the oil and gas sector.
Our quality of life will
correct,
be impacted.
Correct. And then, of course, the geopolitical friction between us, the US, Venezuela. Now, this is on a broader scale, you know? So we could see here that this was a big deal. And this is, if this isn't the wake-up call that we needed, if this wasn't the scream in our face to say, why is it still that the traditional oil and gas energy sector, why are we still relying so heavily on it that this one project that was supposed to happen can now damage our economy, damage our way of life, damage the potential for jobs and, well, the situation with our foreign exchange, right? And what that means for us, why didn't we diversify in the past?
So, Priyana, we have a call.
Yes.
Let's get them
Let's
in.
Take it and see who's there. Hello, good afternoon. All right, try me back. Hello, good afternoon. You're live.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for calling We The Youth.
I just want to ask a few things.
In
1960, I remember Bill Nye saying that because the fuel was going to run out, and we need to start from then to focus on alternative energy.
Yes.
And that alternative energy was solar energy, wind energy, the normal things, right? But what he said, he said greenhouse gases would take over and, you know, we would get climate change. And now we saw that from 1960s to the 2020s, the world leaders ignored that fact and they pushed fossil fuels. And now we are in this position here.
Absolutely.
So I want to know what the leader is going to do to ensure that we ain't going to have no energy deficiency for the future. You understand? Because they did crap already, and we don't want to repeat the tag here. You understand? All right, thanks.
So,
have a good day.
Thanks so much.
You see, that caller's question really underscores the intersectionality between generational views, public policy, the status quo, the powers that drive. What we are discussing here as young people is not a simple matter. I mean, the solutions on paper, step 1 to 10, sound simple, but you have to break certain hard-held beliefs, positions.
We currently have world leaders that are saying that we don't have a climate crisis. We also have some other world leaders who are saying we are in the greatest crisis of our generation, and that is climate change. So the speaker, the caller actually made a lot of sense. We should have implemented renewable energy and some alternative source yesterday.
Yeah.
And that
was the earlier decade.
Point that we made in the first hour. When you create policy in one area, you have to connect it with a future-ready policy.
Absolutely.
Because whatever monies we were generating from oil and gas, some part of that should have been invested in renewables since year dot.
And
Arian, you were going to say
that
a point.
People only considering solar energy, but we have other forms of renewable energy, such as geothermal. The same wells that we drill in for oil, we could drill down and tap into the its heat.
There's wind.
We have some of the biggest waves in Maracas, and you can use wind energy.
And all of us.
Wave energy as well.
All of us, unfortunately, drive
from the waves.
Yeah.
From the movement.
So the movement of the waves.
Okay.
How exactly?
And the tides, because they can do it above and below.
Yeah. So the distance, it's called potential energy, that goes up and comes down, and that
the forces translate into movement.
And that movement.
What Anarion is talking about in, I want to say Japan, but one of those countries.
You want me to step on it?
Yes.
Japan.
It's Japan, right? They've actually created walkways where just by people walking on it, they are powering their cities.
So why do we?
Well, we generated billions. No, you want to know what happened to us? We generated billions of dollars in foreign exchange, and we took a lot of that money and we created government policies that resulted in things like URP and CPEP.
They can put that right or wrong. Eddie had Savannah. I sure every carnival we gain some energy.
Absolutely.
Sure.
And there's so many advancements in technology now, in sustainable energy, in technology for kinetic, for walkways, for roadways, for waves.
Yes.
There's so much accessible advancements in energy. However, we still have those limitations that are legal and grid infrastructure that will be keeping us back from implementing
but
that
Priyana,
in the country.
Just this morning, I read in the newspapers that an energy company has made a decision. Their shareholders voted to remove that company from Trinidad and Tobago. And when you were making the point earlier about the harmful effects of the fallout of the Dragon Gas deal, people have to remember that there are many companies that operate here in Trinidad and Tobago that have options to go elsewhere. And Carrie, what is frightening to me is that they have the same data and sometimes better data than the government does. And they look 10, 15, 20 years. I could tell you as a former consultant to some of these companies
the
how
forecast.
Far they look into the future. And they make business decisions based on developments like this one. So they would have run situational analyses. If the deal comes through, we will do A, B, and C. If it doesn't come through, we will do X, Y, and Z. And my fear is that that first report of one company deciding to cease operations here may have a run-on effect. Now, you may not see it happen overnight, but in time, as you said, Priyana, job loss. Because we're still fighting to find where to put these 1,000 Petrotrin former employees back into productive capacity. And Aaron, I know you firsthand, you have experience with these people in your community, in your family. There has been no development. Have we heard any policy measures in these campaign weeks? And we don't have to call a name, but has any policy been put forward to deal with some of these issues that we are talking about? Excites any of you all? Have you heard something?
I've heard things, but I'm not excited. I've heard things about wanting to do things. I've heard things about wanting to do new projects and things like that, but everything comes with a cost. The cost is towards the taxpayers. And being a taxpayer, I'm wondering where my money is going.
Well, my problem is that when we had a lot of money, what did we do with it?
So
and now that money is scarce, where are we going to find it?
This is where I compare Trinidad to Dubai. Trinidad oil and gas game is decades ahead of that of Dubai. But due to proper management and implementation, Dubai is where it is compared to where we are.
Yeah.
So, Priyana, is there a renewable project in mind that maybe the private sector should be getting behind and not waiting for government? Or is it that the private sector needs to also be more vocal in shifting these policies? Like, what is there something that people like yourself...
Not only private, I would suggest financial institutions. If it is deep push for this grid, the grid tariffs implementation, they can now send loans to businesses and things like that, and they make the money. And then you have private sectors getting involved into doing the implementation. You create jobs, you create employment, and then that money that is being spent to burn our own oil and gas will then be used to better do something in the country, whether it's build a new school, renovate a new school, organize drugs for not to smoke and to sniff, but those that comes under the CDAP and different things like that. So,
but
that's another episode.
But I mean, what is required? Yes, financing institutions, but financial institutions, in order to invest in renewable energy, we need to have some sort of foreign exchange supply. If we have to purchase from wherever our suppliers are, from China, from the US, we have a severe deficit of foreign exchange in the country. How am I supposed to buy goods to bring into Trinidad
that
are solar components that I cannot get US dollars from the bank to be able to pay for these goods?
And I hope that our peers and the younger ones listening are getting the point. We have to also wake up. Our generations have to wake up, step up, open our mouths, advocate more effectively.
So as a young person, what I would look for in this season is to hear them talking about new manufacturing projects, where it is we can build our own batteries in Trinidad.
Absolutely.
Where it is we're doing our own microchips and our own solar panels and doing that expansion.
In the manufacturing sector.
In the manufacturing sector.
But to go back to Priyana's point, sorry to cut you across, but the cost of the electricity. Yeah. While we have the subsidy, why haven't we been able to attract a chip manufacturer into Trinidad and Tobago? Because they use huge amounts of electricity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There are other things in the enabling ecosystem that we have to put into place to bring, to your point, Anarion, while we have some
control.
However, if there is no demand, there will be no supply. So why would a manufacturer try to come into Trinidad to create renewable energy products in a country that is not even implementing renewable energy systems?
And it brings me to what I need to ask here. How can we, the youth, this generation, get them to start looking at it and start implementing it? How are we going to do that?
So one of the projects that our part would like to undertake is actually a school solarization, a national school solarization marathon project where we go to the private sector, the financial institutions, and the Ministry of Education and the government and say, look, we are going to get young people all across the nation involved in this project to power our schools using solar technology. And whatever excess capacity is created, you have to change that legislation today because that excess capacity carry could actually help improve the quality of lives of the people living around the schools.
Yes. Right. So that distributed energy system. Yes. So exactly what you're describing there. We have no legal infrastructure to have distributed energy systems that can help communities, school areas.
Now, I know we have to go to a break, but we are getting a call. Let's take this one before we head to the break, all right? Hello, good afternoon. All right, what's going on there? Hello, good afternoon. Try me back, 625-2257 or 627-3223. Well, since you're sticking, any click. So we're going to take a break. Let's take a break and be back. Continue sending us those messages via WhatsApp, 306-1065. We the youth. It's continuing until 5 p.m. Keep it locked. Welcome back, guys. Welcome back. Freedom 106.5 FM. This is We the Youth. Let me welcome back my co-hosts, Rudolph and Namji.
We're in the house.
It's like a popular soca.
Yeah, well, I grew up listening
So we're talking about renewable energy.
Yes.
And
while the sun is very hot outside, we could be generating energy today, right now.
And I like the idea what you mentioned in one of the countries where you could walk and still
Japan.
Generate electricity from walking.
But I mean, listen, as easy as one step, two step. How can youth get involved now? What can we do? How can we start making these changes?
Yeah.
What do you have to say about that?
I spoke a little bit earlier about youth taking the initiative to learn and to upskill, get themselves educated. We have education and training. Anarion, I believe you are doing the MSc, the Renewable Energy Technology.
UTT,
correct. We also have some free programs that are available through the Indian High Commission. I recently went to India on full scholarship via the Indian High Commission here in Trinidad, and I did a full renewable energy course in National Institute of Solar Energy in India.
Wow.
That is a way that you are not spending a cent, but you are learning. And that is also accessible to any and all youth, any socioeconomic background. Mm. There are certifications, online platforms. Of course, you could reach out and you could ask a question, because I'm happy to help and give the resources that I have used. There's possibility for entrepreneurship. Now, in implementing solar systems in this country, you have very accessible solar lighting, solar water heating, so you can get involved in selling solar systems. My company has solar systems, solar lighting systems. You can take that and install it in communities, in schools. You could get involved in designing and installing solar systems in, like you were saying, in schools.
Right.
And that would bring about education and awareness.
Yes.
You get the students involved in in renewable energy implementation, you have them asking questions about the PV modules. Just the other day in UWE, we installed a 5-kilowatt system for the UWE Masters program. Right. Trifacta did that. And a part of the component was training.
There are other NGOs and all throughout Trinidad that have been doing this in secondary schools.
For sure.
I know of one or two of them that friends of mine work at, that they go into the schools and community centers, and they, like, the Maruga school, I think they did the multi-purpose hall.
Right.
That is completely solarized, and now they train the students there and show them how to do the PV systems and things like that. So reach out to NGOs, and the NGOs themselves can, you know, reach out to us, and we'll put you in contact with a school where it is you could go and train young people on how to do installations to become entrepreneurs.
Yes.
Correct. Yes. There's also, so recently Trifacta did 12 installations, solar system installations, that the UNDP and GCCA, there was a solar initiative to install solar systems in schools, community centers. We went to Nature Seekers. We went to
12 sustainable communities.
12 sustainable communities. Yeah. And so there are projects like that that are being implemented because of our Paris Agreement, our SDGs that we are trying to meet. They're international organizations.
And then if it is you
in,
do reach out to the UN, and, you know, you gather a group of people or a community and you ask them to come and have a conversation with you, they will come.
Yes.
They have a two-hour segment that they do, and then they take questions and answers from your audience.
Some of the ads on this radio station
we
are UN
them.
Solar
yes.
ads, right?
Yeah.
And it's about education and awareness.
Maybe they choose that because of our talk.
While you're always speaking as well, I think what we're getting at really is, if you have an idea, if as a young person you're passionate about this area, you've been doing your own YouTube university programming, but you want to get involved, then get involved.
Yes.
Put your hand up, reach out. I mean, you have persons like Priyana in the space and many other young persons, Anaria and myself. This is why this platform, We The Youth, has been created, because we want to mobilize like-minded young people to really give us that power to create the synergies we were talking about earlier, to help one another transition our country to be in a better place.
And you spoke earlier about youth taking up space. I am a believer in reaching to spaces you could be in the most uncomfortable situation. I work in a male-dominated field. I am usually in uncomfortable situations where I am the only female, the only woman engineer in a room, and I am forced, or I force myself, to take up space, to use my voice, to advocate for more young people and women in energy, to advocate for more young people and women on boards of organizations, public and private sector. That is where the decisions are being made for the energy sector, for the energy transition. And we don't have enough women and young people. We don't have enough youth on these boards.
We don't.
To help to sway the decisions of our own future.
What can we do to incentivize it? Because, thank you so much, Anarion.
Great question.
Right, because how can that be made attractive to the young people, so they could be like, you know what, this is looking like a real good idea, you know, I'll get involved with that.
Well, this is
what
where mandate and policy is important.
Yes.
There are certain boards. I use the example of the Energy Chamber before, because I was a nominee for the Energy Chamber board.
Mm-hmm.
They have a mandatory requirement, or they have a policy in place where they are encouraging persons of younger age, persons of different genders, persons of different ethnicities. So diversity and inclusion, they are including that in a requirement to be a board member.
Wow.
And that should be mandated in all government, private and public sector board requirements. If you have to nominate someone, generally there has to be some thought of diversity in there.
Yeah.
And Carrie, we talked about this yesterday, where, again, government policy could easily be that, because there are hundreds of state agencies, you need thousands of board members to run these, to have oversight.
Yep.
Yeah,
government policy would be
for every board
we want. And we're not talking about people who are there just because they're of a certain age.
Yeah.
People like Brianna, who have qualifications, expertise, passion. So mm-hmm. they have the merit.
Yeah.
They have the training. They have the right to be there. But right now, the policy is we put who we know.
Yeah.
Who knows us.
The long-standing.
We don't actively, intentionally put a call out. Why is there not an ad in a newspaper every time the government changes? Are you a young person between the ages of X, Y, and Z who has experience in this area? We want you on these 300 votes.
We want to hear your voice.
Be intentional. That's how you incentivize it.
Yeah. Because we don't see that, you know. And you only know about the board after it has been installed, after the whole
But look at the photos.
You know what I always have noted this when I go to conferences, whether it's energy conferences, manufacturing conferences. When you look at the board of directors or the board of executives sitting in front of you, what do I see?
I see 50 to 70 year old older men.
That's all I see on these boards.
And it's unfortunate.
And where I said earlier, there is merit in having experience and long-standing knowledge at a table. There is also merit and significance in having the new, fresh, progressive perspectives of the youth on our board.
Yeah.
Fully agreed.
Yeah.
So I think, Anarion, what is one of the reasons that we were also having all these conversations is to pull common threads over the next few weeks and at the end look at those threads and develop some campaigns and positions around that.
Correct.
And I definitely already see us writing a wonderful letter to the whoever forms the incoming administration that, hello, there are over 150 young people that we're aware of that we would like you to position on some of these state boards. And if that is one thing that could come out of this whole exercise, I think we would have started that transition. Yeah. Because in every area of endeavor, you can pick up renewables as a policy.
Absolutely.
Whether you're in the sporting sector, manufacturing, agriculture. So younger people who have this in their mind, when they get in there, they're going to raise it around the board table. They're going to say, how can this agency do its part, pun intended, to further the renewable agenda?
Yeah.
So, Priyana, you know, we're coming up to the top of the hour.
Yeah.
And it's been a in-depth, comprehensive conversation, which these topics require.
Yeah.
And we're thankful to have the space on Freedom 106.5 FM and CNC3 to be able to bring these youth perspectives.
Yeah.
But everyone needs sometimes, what is my call to action? What are the key takeaways?
It's a good thing you said call, because we do have a call online.
Ah,
excellent. Yeah, well, it just went away.
Just before you answer that.
So, Transmark 625-225-7062-73223. I was doing the sign, but, you know, you're
next
passionate
time,
about
it. Next time, take the call.
Next time, I was like, hey, let's go. But Transmark, really quickly, 625-225-7062-73223. Let's continue.
So, Priyana, what would be our key wrapper points and next steps, call to action for people out there?
Right. Well, I have to say with urgency, the energy sector is evolving and the youth of Trinidad and Tobago must be empowered to lead that evolution. Whether you're from Lavantil, Labrie, Point Fortin, Tobago, your ideas, energy and leadership are needed
so
to power a greener, more sustainable future.
Yes, they did. Yes. So let's stick a pin there. Let's
of
see
course.
Who's there. Hello, good afternoon. Hello, good afternoon.
Hi, this is Jason.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm a central for love reason.
Okay.
That's all.
Okay.
Oh, thank
Thanks
you.
So much.
Thanks very much.
He's enjoying the program. Thank you so much.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in closing, we spoke about what our energy landscape is in Trinidad right now. We spoke about the Dragon Gas a little bit. We spoke about the energy, the solar-powered projects that we have that's ongoing. We spoke about how that is reflective of the slow transition to renewable energy.
And how one shift in policy could create so many opportunities.
Correct. And how youth leadership matters in this transition. Youth voices matter in this transition, because our generation is a generation that is seeing the most immense crisis, that is the climate crisis, and we have to make a difference.
And we will be the ones living through it.
Absolutely.
As morbid as it sounds.
Absolutely.
The people who are creating policy now, guys.
Yes.
They're not going to be around to deal with some of this crisis.
They have to be effective,
you know.
It, yes.
Correct.
We spoke about some of the challenges facing youth in the energy sector and how we could overcome it. There are many ways that you could overcome it. Taking up space, as you said, Rudy, using your voice, being in the most uncomfortable situations and still speaking up, finding a safe person or organization to talk to, to turn to, there is our part. There are many organizations that are advocating for renewable energy, youth in renewable energy, and also what you can do as an individual to get yourself in a better space to belong in this energy transition and to belong in the movement towards the future.
Yes. Mm, yes.
Yeah. So, Anarion, we're looking at maintaining this for the next...
Before you continue, a really, really quick call. Hello, good afternoon. All right, now the call's just now coming in. Hello, good afternoon. Quickly.
Hey, good afternoon. If we have any ideas, where can we, like, drop this for the end?
Oh, so Anarion's going to cover that now.
All right, thanks
so
much.
Get all the information on how to get in touch with us.
Yes.
Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, thank you again for listening. Thank you for joining us for 2 hours. If you do want to get in touch with us, you can reach out to us at wemustdo@ourpart.org. That is wemustdo@ourpart, that is PART for Trinidad and Tobago.org. And we do hope you join us both on CNC3 and Freedom 106 tomorrow for a very insightful discussion with none other than Javed Razak, who's going to be discussing with us our inheritance, the oil and gas crisis.
Mm. All right, well, I want to say thanks so much going out to Priya.
Oh,
Priya,
yes,
Udit, for joining us today.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
I loved it. I've learned a lot with the stats that you brought us. And listen, we could do this thing, you know. We just had to start somewhere. We start with the
our
youth.
Our part.
The youth.
Yeah. So, guys, all 5 p.m. news is next. Thank you so much, Rudy. And thank you so much, Anarion, for joining us today.
We'll see you right here again tomorrow, Karen.
Same time, same place.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.